Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with Gabe S. Dunn.
Hello, and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. Sarah Marshall is here, which is long overdue, I think. Oh my gosh, there are cats everywhere.
There are. I agree. It's very long overdue by several years, to say nothing of the most recent months.
Which cat is that?
This is Klaus.
Klaus?
You would know if you ever came to visit.
Oh my God. Wow. Immediately called out. Absolutely immediately called out.
Yeah. Cancel culture. I'm canceling you.
That's like, imagine if people are breaking up in the future and they're just like, you're canceled. And here's why.
Has anyone ever broken up with someone on a podcast and like had the entire breakup present? Like somebody's done that. And
they must have.
Yeah. But like it was on a comedy podcast in 2007 and nobody heard it.
Or do you think in that instance they surprised them with the breakup? Or
yes,
they kind of. Oh wow,
I
and
do.
Another person said, "Let's put this out, baby. This is content."
I also have to tell you, I've been listening to Kara Swisher's memoir, which is really good because she's just like this little like Toto dog who was like, you know, covering the big swinging dicks of Silicon Valley, just like chasing them around, like ar 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 ar. You don't fool me. And
yeah,
she's the best. And so she mentioned that Steve Jobs, when he was telling everybody about podcasts, was like, he was like, they're like Wayne's World for audio. And that was true.
It really was true. Wow.
And that all worked out.
It really did. That's really okay. We have to get into what we're talking about, which is.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Oh my God, please. Sarah, will you tell the audience who doesn't know our history, but who you are?
Yes, I think we have a very cute history. My name is Sarah Marshall. I host a podcast called You're Wrong About, and I also host one called You're Good, which originally was called Why Are Dads? We talked about dad movies. And so you and I first met when Alex Dean and I had you on that show, and we talked about The Wrestler. And about dad feelings on The Wrestler. And apparently around that time, you wrote me a long email that contained like some kind of elaborate, like beautifully written flirtation that you had crafted. And because I had forgotten how to read that year, I was just like, yep, 10:30, and didn't see it. And it's so depressing.
Yeah, the shirt.
I'm so dumb. Like people don't know. We need to raise awareness for how stupid I am.
Here's the thing is that my entire life I have flirted with people with like so much confidence. So if somebody gives me absolutely nothing back, it still doesn't mean to me that like if I believe it, it still doesn't mean that.
Thank God.
But then here's the thing is that people think that that is delusional. But then for me, it is often true. Like you really did, like, you know how they're like, if he wanted to, he would, like, you really did not read the email. like to my DeLulu brain, I'm like, she just didn't read the email.
I really wasn't just not that into you.
It was like all signals were like, she's like not, she does not interested. And for some reason, I was just like, no, she is. They're like, okay, she's legally straight. She like doesn't, she like doesn't reply for like months. And I was like, yeah, no, I think there's something here.
But like, that's what caused all of the great innovation of human history, right? Like, why did we invent the plow? Why did we create agriculture? Because somebody wouldn't give up.
I don't want to like encourage this in other people because there's a whole thing.
Right. It only works if the person that you're interested in truly doesn't realize what's happening. And also, you know, you're very respectful. So you weren't being like terribly repetitive about anything. But then so this all culminated where we were like, we hadn't talked in a while and we were texting, which is funny because you reached out to me and I'd just been thinking about you or like talking wow. about you that day. And it was like close to New Year's. It was about to become 2023. And we were having a lovely time. And at a certain point, you were like, Sarah, I'm flirting with you. Do you know that I'm flirting with you? And I was like, no, really?
I know. And then I made a PowerPoint of all the instances where I did flirt with you and you absolutely did not reply.
Yes.
And it's a substantial PowerPoint.
I know.
And it's called, I called it Getting Sarah Marshall. And
which is a very good pun.
Thank you. And then it worked. So.
And then it worked.
I know. Listen, sometimes, you know, like the thing where it's like, oh, like they're just not answering because they like me too much or whatever. It's like that sort of delusional thinking. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes
they're so depressed, they've forgotten how to communicate. That doesn't happen to people, especially now.
Yeah. It's not about you. It's other things.
It's really the state of the world. You know, it makes it even harder, but we're doing it. We're prevailing.
Well, speaking of love and romance, I had never. So I like doing movies about heists and stealing and money. And I was trying to figure out what we should watch. And you suggested A Fish Called Wanda, which I've never watched.
Which is amazing.
And also I didn't understand the title. I didn't know what it was. I knew nothing about it.
Did you think that it was a fish calling someone on the phone, calling Wanda on the phone?
I thought it was just like one of those 90s movies where they try to give it like a weird title. Do you know what I mean?
Like Toad the Wet Sprocket. I mean, that's a band, but you know.
Yeah, just like we're like in the 90s for some reason, executives didn't really care if the title conveyed anything.
That's true. Like Cold Dog Soup. That was a title that was not selling the movie.
Yeah. Or even just like there weren't that many. I feel like you could go to Blockbuster, pick up a movie, look at the title, not have any fucking clue what that means. Also, sometimes you could go and it would just be a very direct title like So I Married an Axe Murderer. And you're like, mm-hmm. I know exactly what this is about.
I loved titles that were sentences. It felt so anarchic. I also, something that I was reminded of recently, I've been apparently listening to books on tech history. And I was listening to another one that mentioned something I had totally forgotten, which is, do you remember how, because it wasn't just that you would go to Blockbuster or God help you, your local video store, and you could get whatever you wanted of what was there. Things would, because someone else had rented them and you would spend weeks like trying to get, you know, Gordy.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, it was. Well, we didn't have like weeks because my parents would just be like, go in there, pick something mm-hmm. and come back. And 9 times out of 10, me and my sister would pick Rat Race.
I've never seen that, but I know that it's a remake of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh, we would just pick Rat Race every single time. And then in college, I dated the nephew of the guy who wrote Rat Race. So, and honestly, he told me like, oh, my uncle's a TV writer. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. What does he work on? And they're like, well, he works on Monk. He does this. He created Monk. And he also wrote Rat Race. And I was like, I have to call my sister, actually. Leave this interaction and call my sister. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. I don't know if you know, but I'm a business myself, and I have to run everything on my own, and it is very difficult, especially to deliver you a product such as this podcast. Luckily, I have Melissa to help me, and we want to keep all the money that we make. So how do we do that? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit from NetSuite. Everything is so expensive. How do I boost performance? How do I pay everyone? How do I cut costs? There you go. You want inventory? You want financial systems in the cloud? You got it, baby. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 I have been using Mint to manage my finances, but bad news, Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There's a better alternative, Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarch.com/badmoney. It is very stressful, confusing, and time-consuming to manage my finances. I try all the apps, as you guys know, and I've just been like flighty with them. They've never stuck. But now I have Monarch, and it is easy to use. It has powerful features like collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, product improvements. It's just been really helpful to see everything laid out and especially be able to collaborate if I want to. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Yeah, we've talked about that a lot here. Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and recurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Of course, I've been frustrated in the past with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads. So was Monarch. So they built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. We never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's monarchmoney.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring in one place so easy. Like, think about how much you have to do in order to hire someone and how much you have to gather, plus scheduling, plus messaging. Like, if I was looking to hire someone, I would feel that it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish that I could use Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So, okay. So I had no idea what this movie was. I still don't. Can you, did he name his fish after her?
He did. Yeah.
And why?
Because he loves her.
Well, who? The guy with the stutter?
Yeah. He loves Wanda, the human. And so he has a fish called Wanda.
Okay. Well, it largely...
I never thought to wonder about it. I guess it was like, yep, that's what men do. Because I've been watching this movie since I was like 7.
Okay, yeah. So what is your experience of this movie?
Yeah. So I've been watching this movie since I was a kid. And I feel like, as so many neurodivergent people do, I had like a real Monty Python phase in middle school. Mm-hmm. And that was like also something, also I think a common experience, something I bonded with my dad about. And this was also a movie that he loved. And so it helped me to like share something with him. And also I remember, I don't know, it like taught me about the male gaze and also about like where I wanted to be in it, because it's like Jamie Lee Curtis is hot, but it's allowing her to like lead all these criminals and everybody else around by the nose. Mm-hmm. And it's about money, clearly.
Yeah. So, okay. So short version is, mm-hmm, Jamie Lee Curtis is like a thief, like a bank robber or just a thief. And then Kevin Klein, who I was delighted to see, who I'm never upset to see, Kevin Klein is her like lover, but they pretend that that's her brother.
Yeah, it's like the wings of the dove.
Yeah, to pull off crimes. And then there's a guy that they do the crime with. She's like pretending, or she's sleeping with him or whatever, to get his, you know, trust. And then he's got another guy he works on crimes with who has a very bad stutter, mm-hmm, and also loves animals. And then they do a robbery of some diamonds. And then they turn in the guy, the first guy, and Kevin Klein and Jamie Lee Curtis are like, yeah, we did it. But then they open the safe and the diamonds are not in there because the guy didn't trust them. And so, mm-hmm, now they're like on a frantic rush to try to find the diamonds, even though they turned this guy in. What they should have done was check for the diamonds first and then turn the guy in.
That would have been smart. Yeah. But, you know, it's also like an Americans in London story, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Such a funny way to look at it.
Yeah, it comes down to, a lot of it comes down to the U.S. versus Britain hating
like
each other.
Like the Ross's Wedding episode of Friends.
It very much so. And so then she's trying to get information on where he would have hid the diamonds. So she goes to try to get with Archie Leach, who is the main guy's, or the whatever, the guy that got arrested, George, mm-hmm, his lawyer, barrister. Mm-hmm. And now this is where I went, oh, John Cleese, because
there
I did not know this movie was, I did not know this movie was Monty Python at all.
Yeah, it's like half Python. It's Python or Monty, half of it.
But it takes place, you know, it takes place in a little bit of a more grounded world than Monty Python tends to.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like these sort of stray elements of it, but it's also, yeah. And then it feels like connected to Fawlty Towers because it's so based on John Cleese being this poor man whose frigid wife doesn't appreciate him. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. So there are some themes that were really wild for me. One was the stutter, which was so wild. And I guess Michael Palin, who's, mm-hmm, playing Ken, the guy with the stutter, he is like, oh, his dad had a really bad stutter. And so he was emulating that. And like the joke is that he can't get his words out and everyone's trying to move very quickly. So, okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Then like you have like Kevin Klein's character is a lunatic who is like very jealous of, it's basically like all of this wild stuff happening. And then the actual love story between Jamie Lee Curtis and John Cleese is like a real rom-com love story.
Mm. Yeah. And that's kind of like the driving engine of the story, is that she has to seduce him to figure out where the loot is. And then they kind of, things actually work out between them, we're meant to believe.
So I read like the oral history that was in Vanity Fair. And wow. Yeah, I did a little bit of research. So this movie came out in 1988. And in the research...
Just like us.
Just like me and you. In the research that I was doing, they had an original ending where it was clear that she was also going to double cross Archie.
Mm.
And they screened it and people hated it. And they thought that that isn't nice. And they were really genuinely rooting for Archie and Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just made it that they actually do run off together. And it's like actually they are really in love and she really does love him.
And, you know, and I loved this couple when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, less so now that I'm a grown up woman. But you know what else stands out to me? Because at some point they go to this lovely house, like on, I don't know, the Thames or whatever. I don't know, rivers. To have an assignation, and it turned in classic kind of British bedroom farce style, it turns out that a family with kids has rented it. And so they arrive home right when John Cleese is like completely naked reciting Russian poetry. But the upstairs of that house, instead of a railing, just has like a nautical rope. And it's like, you're telling me a family with children is staying there? This is what I think about at this age.
Yeah, at that age. Yeah, it was very sexual. Like,
yeah.
Kevin Kline, first of all, Kevin Kline.
It's a very sexy movie. Yeah. It's a sexy film.
I think when he was naked, I there was a hint of ball.
I believe that. I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but I bet you could sneak up.
John Cleese. I don't think of John Cleese as a nude romantic lead.
But you know, he's pretty toned in this.
He looked good for an older. Yeah. I also had the thought that I felt badly about this thought because I know Jamie Lee Curtis has battled intersex rumors like her whole career. Mm-hmm. But I also was like, wow, her and Kevin Kline were really giving T for T. Like he was such a flamboyant little like weirdo. He also like pretend. Also, Kevin Kline's entire career of pretending to be gay is just like or like being like he's played a lot of gay characters, I think, because he's just so flamboyant.
What do you think about Mr. Fishoder?
Oh,
on Bob's Burgers.
You think he's gay? Probably. Right.
Well, I guess when you say that, that's who comes to mind first. And I know that's probably not canonically true, but, you know, he is like a cane waving dandy.
Yeah, there's a lot of like Kevin Kline's outfits in this are very like particular and very like he's really trying to show off in a way or like be very like peacocking.
Yeah, there's something. And I think I wanted to. Is it true that Kevin Kline won a Best Supporting Oscar?
OK, so this was the other most wild thing.
Yeah,
so this, I watched the movie. It's like a farce. It's funny. It's very sexual.
You're like, what a fun time. I could have got this for $5 at a bait shop, I bet.
Irreverent, like very irreverent. And then I look and I'm like, what a weird like cult classic. No, it won. It was nominated for Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor. Kevin Kline won for Best Supporting Actor for this movie. And so I was like, wait a minute. Do we just not reward weird comedies anymore?
I think this is something I wanted to talk about because also, and I'm pretty sure she didn't win, although God knows I can't remember anything, but 88, I believe, was also the year that Joan Cusack was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Working Girl, which is also like a very broad comedic role and like just a fun, rompy movie and not like, you know, she didn't cry in that is the point, you know?
Right. I'm like, really? Like, okay, Kevin Kline he's doing the most in this. Mm-hmm. But like, we're not giving Best Supporting Actor nominations for rom-coms. We're not giving for like weird.
Linguini pecorino.
What Sarah did was imitate a thing that Kevin Kline does in the movie. I guess Jamie Lee Curtis's character loves when someone speaks in a foreign accent. It like brings her to
she loves it when he levels. Speaks Italian.
Yeah.
And he kind of just like huffs his own armpit smell.
And smells her shoes at one point.
Yeah. It's great.
She likes when John Cleese speaks Russian.
Well, and also like as a sort of tweenager, like I really liked scenes in movies that made sex look sexy, but also like fun and funny and right? Like, and this I remember is one of the main places where I learned to seek that out.
Yeah, Kevin Klein literally comes on camera and his eyes. he has
cried. He got an Oscar eyes, for that.
And he got an Oscar. Like, I did not, this to me did not read like 2024 Oscar movie. Like, at all.
No. I don't even know who won Oscars this year. I like to just not look it up and wait till I find out organically. It's kind of fun.
Emma Stone did win for a movie with a lot of sex in it, but it was like very high art presenting.
Yeah, totally. Good for her. And I feels like there's more space for that type of thing, right? And The Favorite as well. It doesn't seem like the type of movie that would have won someone a Best Actress Oscar in the 80s. Or maybe not. I don't know. There was weird art stuff floating around, but
it's farce and it's like, you know, definitely non-American because of Yorgos's sensibilities, but it's also like it is doing a lot, whereas like this is the actors are doing a lot. It's shot right. Very normal,
but it's just a comedy.
It's just a comedy,
and it's a really well executed comedy. But well, and this is a question I have for you too, actually, now that you mention it, is like, what is farce? Because I read Noises Off recently, which is a very funny thing to read versus see, which is, you know, have you seen that in any iteration? It's a parody of kind of classic English bedroom drama or bedroom farce, where it's about a struggling troupe of actors rehearsing a farce that has them like slamming doors and like having mistaken identities and etc. But that for the second act, the stage rotates and then you see the actors backstage like sabotaging each other and missing their cues and stuff. And then in the third act, it rotates again and you see them like basically not performing it as they're at the end of their tour. So it's really fun. But also just part of my question thinking about that is like, what is farce and what defines it and why do we need it?
It's when there's just like wacky scenarios that keep happening. I mean, I'm not an expert, but in this Vanity Fair piece, John Cleese was talking about how he rewrote the script like 13 or 14 times. He got notes from everyone. He said he got really detailed notes from Steve Martin. And like, he got like a lot, you know, he screened it, he rewrote it. Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Klein were saying that if they said something funny on set, he'd be like, okay, and he would rewrite it. Or like, he had an assistant who like sometimes would say something and then John Cleese would be like, okay, yeah, I like that, and change it. And in the piece, Jamie Lee Curtis says, in Hollywood, they would not have even heard what, like, they would not even let the assistant give ideas. Like, this is so wild that you're like taking all these ideas. And so he did a lot of rewrites. So you would think that it's just like, oh, and this wacky thing and this wacky thing. But it really was like, he wanted it to all come together in a very real way that you would believe all of this is happening. Like, even I think now of the part where Stephen Fry, a little cameo from Stephen Fry, where Kevin Klein needs to get onto the plane or onto the tarmac, but like they have a scene of him tricking a guy into giving him his boarding pass. And I was like, yeah, like even the smallest things that you're like, okay, this would be funny and it's weird. We need to know like how it's happening and it needs to all come together like these puzzle pieces into making this wacky thing actually say something about people and actually not have loose ends and not just be for the sake of wackiness.
Yeah. Yeah. Because often in comedy, I think when you're watching something, you have the sense of an arbitrariness where you're like, well, this is happening, but it doesn't feel like it has to be happening. It could be
right.
Any number of other choices. And it almost feels like comedy, when it really works, operates on the same rules as tragedy, where no matter how you try and go back and dissect it, everything that happened feels in a way destined to have happened based on these characters as you know them to be.
Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories, and also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. Oh my gosh. Budgeting is wild. I am trying to make progress every day. I am, as you guys know, like deeply into rebuilding my finances. It is very hard to keep motivated, but I am constantly looking at the numbers, constantly like looking at ways to cut stuff. And I'm looking for new ways to save. And when I do, I can find my financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. With a Chime checking account, you get features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, or get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Learn more at chime.com/badmoney. I have constantly had to deal with overdraft fees my entire life. When I first learned what they were upon getting my first bank account, it was a very rude awakening. I also learned about something when I was writing my book, where a lot of banks take out money from your account in the order that makes you have overdraft fees, which is so unfair. But Chime allows you an overdraft of up to $200 with no fees. Join millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. Chime helps you make progress with fee-free overdraft up to $200. Your next deposit is applied to your balance. Get spotted on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. No monthly fees or maintenance fees. Over 60,000 fee-free ATMs. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion. Friends give friends a boost. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to increase a friend's SpotMe limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to raise your limit. Set up direct deposit into your Chime account. After a qualifying direct deposit of $200 or more, Chime will notify you to enroll in SpotMe. With an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance. Your next direct deposit is applied to your negative balance. Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, I think Glee sometimes did farcical stuff, but they would change the characters' personalities to fit what they wanted to happen. And this is very much like we are taking these characters' personalities and we are making it so that this is inevitably what's going to happen, even though it's so over the top. You know, even down to the fact that he's having an affair with Wanda. His wife is named Wendy. So Wanda has the security deposit key in a locket, and then she drops it in his house, and then the wife finds it and decides that she loves it and like, oh, thank you for this gift, it's so sweet. I mean, so he needs to get the locket back for Wanda. He doesn't know it has the key in it. She's just acting like it means a lot to her. And then it's a whole like Three's Company falling on each other, physical comedy, trying to steal. He tries to swallow the locket, like all this stuff, faking a robbery, like It's people doing the absolute most to try to get out of trouble or accomplish something. And every single scene has something that needs to be accomplished that is wacko. Like there's a side note where this old woman witnessed the robbery. She's the one witness. And George,
this was tough for me as a kid.
Oh,
this whole subplot.
Okay. So this is also, I cannot believe they did this. So Ken, the guy that is with the stutter, that is the right-hand man of the guy in jail, he needs to kill the old woman to make sure that she doesn't testify. She happens to have a bunch of little dogs. And so he's an animal lover. And so what happens is every time he tries to kill her, he accidentally kills one of her dogs. And we see the dead dog. And in the Vanity Fair piece, they said that they initially, you saw blood with the dog, and then they had to reshoot it because audiences were like, no.
Yeah. And they do. And they make it very cartoonish looking. And I don't know. It's not my cup of tea, but famously other people like things I don't like.
Well, then coming up on animal stuff, Ken is obsessed with his pet fishes. Pet fish. He's getting interrogated. This is maybe what won Kevin Klein the Oscar.
That's probably true.
He's getting interrogated. He needs to know where the safety deposit box with the diamonds is, because they have the key, but they don't know where it is, where the box is. And he ties him up. He puts French fries up his nose and a lime in his mouth, or a pear in his mouth. So yeah. He can't barely breathe. And then he starts eating the fish out of the tank one by one.
Pretty intense. Yeah, it's very like Michael Madsen and Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, like you're like, oh, this is, we're not dealing with a rational human being. This is unhinged.
Yeah.
He's eating the fish. I kept being like, no, there's no way. There's no way. Finally eats Wanda. And that is what breaks Ken.
It's terrible.
It's so awful. I had to look if he was really eating fish. He wasn't. They made like, he had to like wiggle it to make it seem like it was like some sort of jelly plastic.
Yeah, he's
thing.
Doing good sleight of hand. I mean, and you know, and I'm pretty sure they don't let you do that in England. I mean, I haven't read the law, but they have a better record on animal cruelty than we do, I think.
I just was like, oh my God. And then there's like a thing where Kevin Klein like pretends to be gay and like everyone kisses each other. But with that scene, So Kevin Klein, just to iterate that he's like, he'll do whatever it takes to get the money. So a lot of stuff was improvised. Like in real life, he didn't know that he was going to get the pear in the mouth. Kevin Klein just put the pear in his mouth. So there's a lot of stuff that was improvised that now you simply would not be able to do. Like the gay part, like the kiss or the attempted kiss and the gay part was improvised. Like, and in this Vanity Fair thing, nobody seems particularly mad at Kevin. Jamie Lee Curtis at one point is like, well, you know, won him the Oscar. It's hard for me to have any complaints about a movie that did so well.
And then she won an Oscar 35 years later.
Exactly. And then she also like pushed back on some stuff where like John Cleese was like in the scene at the house where the kids walk in and see him naked. It was initially going to be her. And then she was like, that's not funny. I'm hot.
It's true.
And he was like, you're right. Aww. And I don't think that scene would be able to happen. Like, I don't think like kids walking in and seeing a man's penis would.
No, would, even though it does happen.
Well, obviously, but I don't know that they would put that in a movie now.
It's hard. Yeah, it's probably true.
Like, I think there's so much stuff like that it's hard because I'm like, it's so improvised. And I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. But then I don't know. It's just it made me genuinely, I guess I hadn't watched like a farce from the 80s in a while. It genuinely made me be like, whoa. Like, I was like, I felt like very like, oh, I'm like kids today who like would be like, oh my goodness.
Right. Well, and I feel like there's an element of farce that is about boundaries being crossed, because a lot of them involve like having sex with someone you think is somebody else.
Huge.
You know,
her like seducing all these different people, which I actually found. I was like, is this female empowerment? Like,
I choose to believe it is. Yeah. She ends up with the money at the end.
Yeah. Like she's like down to do whatever. But then it does make it nice when she does fall in love with Archie. But like, right, it's this thing where like she's this woman who like steals and sleeps with people or whatever. And Archie is cheating on his wife and has a child that he presumably leaves behind to
just
go with her.
Just abandons without a thought at the end, which we don't worry about. It's the 80s.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's the 80s.
Yeah. Whenever you confront your parents about this stuff, they're like, it was the 80s. What was I...
I met a woman. She was a diamond thief. What are you going to do?
You know how it goes. And you're like, no, I don't.
I really don't know how it goes, but I love it. Like it's a good sign of a good script that at the end you're still rooting for them.
Yeah, completely. Well, and I think that we know that we're in the farce zone. And I think what attracted me to this movie so much as a kid is that Jamie Lee Curtis feels so in control, basically, yes, the whole time. Yeah.
She's really good at lying and scamming.
These men are easy to fool, which makes it, which helps. But still, yeah. And she keeps a cool head.
Yeah. She's like definitely the person in charge. I did feel sad. So there was one part where, in terms of money, where she's like, are you rich? And Archie says, no, my wife is. And then he, at one point in the middle of all of this, he calls her and is like, I'm not rich. I'm not going to be able to give you the life you want. So we can't be together. And you see her actually sad about that. This person who we've only thought cares about money. She's like heartbroken to be dumped.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, she's running around with Kevin Klein types. And so this is, you know, something different that she's feeling drawn to, maybe. I also love and have always loved that in that scene, she's like lying on her bed, holding her legs like perpendicular in the air, like dangling the locket from her toes into her face. Just killing.
Yeah, she's very hot in this movie.
Well, that's a very important part of it. And she's working it. I feel like this was the first time I understood what it meant to like work what the Lord gave you.
Yeah, I mean, she's also not a stereotype. Like, she's gorgeous, but her hair is short and cropped. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not like va-va-voom. She's just like very sexy.
Well, she's got, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, I think, has like a face that a lot of studious girls identify with, because there's, I think, a feeling in a lot of sex symbols of like even your face being kind of curvy and upholstered. You know, you have these like soft cheeks and little button nose, and just the sort of like the feminine idea of softness is so important across the board. And she was always like, just looked like someone you knew from your geography class. And she, you know, I have a bony face. She has a bony face, but she's got a juicy ass, and we contain multitudes.
Yourself and Jamie Lee Curtis. Gets very like, you don't see. I remember on The Bachelor years ago, there was a contestant named Becca, who I immediately fell in love with, who was like literally the first Bachelor contestant with cropped hair, with a pixie cut. And that was like a big deal. That was a big deal at the time.
Yeah. And the way that the sort of the contestants historically have like cosplayed the idea of female is so interesting. I can't get over that they have to buy their own evening wear.
Oh, I know. I know that they have to like bring their own really expensive dresses and stuff. Now you can see they kind of like switch off and like share dresses, which is funny. But like, yeah, it was a big deal because they were like, ooh, she's quirky. She's like different. She's, you know, so like it's like fun to see Wanda as this like sex symbol and this person who like, but I think it's also that she's so confident. That she like, you know, also very interesting is she goes after Archie pretty hard.
Yes. And I love the way that she goes for him, which is that she like sees him. She kind of does a cold read. He's leaving court. She puts on some glasses and she's got, and like all of her clothes in this are by the standards of many people, absolutely terrible. Yeah. She looks incredible in every one of these outfits. And so she walks up to him and she's like, oh my God, I've seen you somewhere. And she sees something with his name on it. She's like, I knew it. You're Archie Leach. And he's like, Leach. And she's like, yeah, you know, and just like the sheer sort of enthusiasm, like it's just wonderful to watch her do her grift, but also kind of pretty quickly have this real fondness for him.
Yeah. And like, you know, it's very much like she pretends that he's this famous lawyer that she's seen in court. And that sort of feeds his ego because he's just
like, I guess that's true.
Men are so willing to believe that they're like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you saw me do like my little thing and you loved it. You thought it was so great. Mm-hmm. she does end up testifying, and Archie, you know, flubs and calls her darling because she starts giving testimony that's actually going to put George in prison, even though she's supposed to be a defense witness.
She's like, I know it was that time because I looked at the clock and I thought, I wonder where he's going at 7:30 with that sawed off shotgun.
It's a really perfect line. It's really perfect. So then Archie, trying to get George off, asks about the diamonds. Then he finds out that they're, Otto and Wanda are like not brother and sister. They're thieves. And that, you know, he knows, and that like they're headed to get the diamonds, basically. But then it's so like, then you think that he would be upset more, but he ends up just being like, all right, fuck it. And they decide they're going to go to Rio together.
Yep. And then we never got a sequel.
There was a spiritual sequel called,
which I've never seen.
I've never seen it either, called Fierce Creatures.
It got bad reviews, but you know, sometimes there are gems, but sometimes the reviews are right.
You can't really recapture this magic, unfortunately.
Well, and like, okay, and as someone coming to it for the first time, like, yeah, does it work for you? Is it magic?
I really liked it because I had no idea what to expect. Like, it literally could have been Goodfellas. Like, I knew it was about, like, truly, like, I knew it was about, like, thieves and, like, stealing, but I just didn't, I had no concept. And then I was like, maybe it's like Ocean's 11. But, like, here's the thing is that a lot of scripts today, especially about robberies, are very caught up in the mechanics of everything. And they forget the interpersonal dynamic between the people. And like, it's like, I've seen the Now You See Me films, right? Where they're magicians and they steal. And like, yeah, but can I tell you anything about those characters? Like, it is meticulous. They certainly like do fun tricks and like, it's fun, you know, whatever. But I don't really know what they want and what their deals are. Whereas like with this, it's like, yes, it was meticulously written so that the heist and everything made sense. But it was more so memorable, like the characters and the wacky situations were more memorable than the actual like, and this is how we pulled it off, which seems to be like what they write about today. So I was surprised because it was reliant more on memorable characters than I think heists are now, where they're just like, it doesn't matter. People love heists. Like they love The Rock, like get us in there. And then like, it doesn't matter like what, you know. Let's impress everyone in the script with like how they do it rather than like impressing them with someone like Otto or Archie or Wanda.
Well, and even Ocean's 11, which I think is, you know, definitely for many people an iconic heist movie, you know, it works because of the relationships between these people, I would say. And Ocean's 11 is kind of like Newsies in that it's like really about the love between too many guys to keep track of and the things they can do together.
Very true. Yeah. And the relationship between George Clooney and Brad Pitt, like that's the and Matt Damon to a certain extent, even Andy Garcia and George Clooney, you know, their sort of rivalry over Tess. It's like more about the two of them sort of. Having a
George Clooney's profound desire to fuck Andy Garcia
something
as hard as he can
something.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's like always something vaguely homoerotic. So that's what I liked about this movie where it was like, I almost want Otto to end up with Ken.
I know. I think that if you were to remake it today, that would be how you would.
Right. That he would, from pretending to be gay towards him, kind of discover because they also.
That's that character's redemption arc.
Yeah. His redemption arc, because also like the way that he confronts Ken about being gay is he says something about like, well, you know, the way you dress.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's sort of like a weird, I feel like that's something that you would say from like internalized homophobia, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think that getting high off smelling your own armpits is iconic bisexual behavior.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it's so funny because it does end with Ken killing Otto by running him over with a steamroller in vengeance for his fish. So the opposite of a love story.
Well, and then Otto is like kind of cartoon type alive at the end, but we can believe in our Ken and Otto redemption arc as well, I think.
That's true. That's so fair. He jumps on the plane. They shake hands. They go, you know what? You ate my fish. I ran you over with a steamroller. Everyone's got baggage.
Let's go to Trader Vic's. Let's have a drink.
He does cling to the plane and then he's blown off during takeoff. Also, every time there's airport shenanigans, I'm always just like, oh, 9/11 ruined airport shenanigans for us all.
If not for 9/11, among so many other things, aside from the, you know, giant cost to human life and well-being, we could also have more movies where people have hijinks on tarmac.
Exactly.
We're missing that now.
So then there's an epilogue that I don't really think we needed. That Archie and Wanda were married in Rio, had 17 children. Ken was a master of ceremonies at SeaWorld. Otto, master. Like, it doesn't really, we don't need the epilogue at all. It makes no sense. It's not funny. It's just like,
sound like Floor jealous. We don't want that.
I'm sorry, what?
That was like, there was this New Yorker story a few years ago and a series that was on HBO about this like evangelical conservative Brazilian all-purpose celebrity who quote-unquote adopted like dozens and dozens of kids, and it's just like whenever people do that something weird is gonna happen.
Yeah, what are you collecting all these children for?
Yeah, just collect Beanie Babies like the rest of us.
Yeah, mugs or something. You don't need children.
You don't need children. Get a mug like the rest of us.
So then shockingly, it's like it wins all these awards. I think it makes, to me, John Cleese a sex symbol.
Oh, I'm so glad you think that, because I feel that way, but I don't want to be mocked for that belief.
I don't know if I actually have not checked up on his latest. Like, I feel like every man who's famous now, who's old, probably has come out and said something.
I think he's up to no good, but let's not worry about it.
Okay, well, he's probably said some really, yeah, he's like, you know.
The odds of him being a transphobe at his age and his Britishness are like 79%. Yeah.
Unfortunately. But, you know, we can't slander him. But just in general, I feel as though men that age, it's like, I don't know, man. So we're just saying Archie in the movie is a sex symbol. Don't worry about the rest of it.
Yeah, we're very pro-Archie. And yeah.
Also, you know what's so funny is that they talk about the director, Charles Crichton, right? And they say, oh, he was 77 years old at the time. So they had John Cleese come on and like co-direct a bit because they were worried about his age. Our presidential candidates.
Right? It's like if you're too old to direct a mid-budget comedy, maybe you shouldn't run for president. That's a really good litmus test.
I was like, wow. So they get the diamonds. He gets the girl. They leave. And you like to believe that she does not double cross him in the end.
Yeah, I think they at least have some nice years together. And, you know, maybe not everyone has to be together forever after the end of a movie, but maybe they're together for like 4 years.
And then he like is like, you know what? I actually really like it in Rio. I'm going to stay here and just sort of like coast and drink on the beach and whatever.
And she finds some other scam to run.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah. She gets into art theft.
Oh, art theft is the one thing that I'm like, yeah, that seems fine.
Are there good? I want to hear people's suggestions for good art heist movies. I guess the Thomas Crown Affair, the remake and the newer one come to mind. I saw the Pierce Brosnan one when I was a kid, but we could do with some more art heist movies, I believe.
We need a movie about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. Do you know about that one?
That's, I've heard of it.
Okay. That is one of my favorite heists. Yeah, why not? There's a podcast called My Favorite Murder. I have my favorite heist.
I would listen to My Favorite Heist because most of the time, you know, I know there are exceptions, but generally people don't die during those.
Very true. This was, some people came in, they robbed the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. They took stuff that made no fucking sense. They took nonsensical things. They left very expensive things. They took very non-expensive things. They cut paintings out of their frames, thereby rendering them absolutely useless. Like, They like were not, they, it was the weirdest heist of all time. And then they were never caught. It is unsolved to this day. And none of the artifacts have, who the fuck? Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Patriots fans.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us for this breakdown and takedown that was all over the place. And it's a fun one, guys. We have fun here sometimes. We don't always talk about taxes. So do you want to tell my audience where to find you?
Yeah. Okay. You can find me. I do two podcasts. Like I said, one is called You Are Good. We talk about movies and our feelings about movies. And one is called You're Wrong About. And we talk about recent history. We just did an episode that came out the week we're recording this on Robert Opel, the Oscar streaker in 1974, who was like the gay history Forrest Gump, it turns out.
Oh, wow. He and I have to battle for that.
Yeah.
For that title.
Well, you know, you can have titles for different slices of history, but he definitely, was shoulder to shoulder with revolutionaries. Yeah, it was a really fun one. And I think if you haven't listened to You're Wrong About, you certainly don't have to, but I would be the last to tell you that you need to.
Oh my God, you do.
But
need
I think
to.
The goal of it is to find the little like tufty bits of history that are sticking out, the loose threads, and kind of pull on something from a kind of a wacky anecdote that leads us into a deeper understanding of humanity. Doesn't that sound fun?
Yeah, you're selling it short. It's the best show. I don't know how to explain it. It's the best one.
Yeah, it's the best show.
You've heard of it. Everyone is starstruck when I say I know Sarah. People are like, you know, she's podcasting royalty.
And you're podcasting royalty. And I love to affirm each other's royalty. And also, I'm going to be focusing on my vegetable garden this summer. So, Gabe, what can I grow for you?
I like radishes.
I have like four kinds of radishes planted. And okay. I have little radish sprouts right now.
I really like radishes. I've never said this on this show. Very breaking news. But a radish and butter sandwich?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of pepper or whatever.
Yeah.
Sarah, you've humanized me here on this show.
Okay. You seemed so cold and unfeeling previously. This will be a really.
Well, thank you so much. I like you a lot.
Thank you so much. I like you so much. You're the best. Yay. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond Imprint Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.